Good day. This is Mary reading from the Herald and Review for Friday, June 15th. The top story is report email probe mishandled. Out of Washington. In a stinging rebuke, the Justice Department watchdog declared Thursday that former FBI Director James Comey was insubordinate in his handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation in the explosive final months of the 2016 presidential campaign. But it also found there was no evidence that Comey's or the department's final conclusions were motivated by political bias toward either candidate. President Donald Trump and his supporters had looked to the much-anticipated report to provide a fresh line of attack against Comey and the FBI, as Trump claims that a politically tainted bureau tried to undermine his campaign and, through the later Russia investigation, his presidency. Clinton and her supporters, on the other hand, have long complained that she was the one whose election chances were torpedoed by Comey's investigation announcements about her email practices in the summer and then shortly before the election. Comey, whom Trump fired shortly after taking office, bore the brunt of much criticism in the report, but not for political favoritism. The inspector general concluded that the FBI director, who announced in the summer of 2016 that Clinton was extremely careless with classified material, but would not be charged with any crime, departed from normal Justice Department protocol numerous times. But it also said, we found no evidence that the conclusions by the prosecutors were affected by bias or other improper considerations. Rather, we determined that they were based on the prosecutor's assessment of the facts, the law, and past department practice. The conclusions were contained in a 500-page report that documented in painstaking detail one of the most consequential investigations in modern FBI history and reveals how the Bureau, which for decades endeavored to stand apart from politics, came to be entangled in the 2016 presidential election. Trump supporters quickly focused on the report's recounting of anti-Trump text messages from two FBI officials who worked the Clinton probe and later the Russia case, including one in which an agent says, "We'll stop it," with regard to a possible Trump victory. The report suggests that text from Peter Strzok, who was later dropped from Mueller's team, implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects. Spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that the report reaffirmed the president's suspicions about Comey's conduct and the political bias amongst some of the members of the FBI. But the report rejects the Trump taking talking point that the FBI favored Clinton over him and that its leaders were driven by politics. It also does not second-guess the FBI's conclusion that Clinton should not have been prosecuted, despite repeated assertions by Trump and his supporters that anyone less politically connected would have been charged. The report underscores efforts by senior FBI and Justice Department leaders in the final stages of the presidential race to juggle developments in the Clinton investigation. She'd used her private email for some government business while Secretary of State, with a separate probe into potential coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia that was diverting FBI resources and attention. The Russia investigation was unknown at the time to the American public. The FBI, in a statement accompanying report, accepted the conclusion that Comey broke from protocol and that errors in judgment by staff damaged the Bureau's reputation. Comey wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times in which he said he disagreed with some conclusions but respected the watchdog's work. Trump is certain to use the report's harsh assessment of FBI actions to try to validate his firing of Comey last year, an act central to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into whether the president sought to obstruct justice. The White House cited as the original rationale for Comey's firing his handling of the Clinton investigation, even though Trump days later said he was thinking of this Russia thing. On the other side, even absent political bias, the report alleges a long series of misjudgments that Democrats will likely use to support their belief that Clinton was wronged by the FBI. The watchdog faults Comey for his unusual July 5, 2016 news conference at which he disclosed his recommendation against bringing charges in the email investigation. Cases that end without charges are rarely discussed publicly, and Comey did not reveal to Attorney General Loretta Lynch his plans to make an announcement. statement. We found that it was extraordinary and insubordinate for Comey to do so, and we found none of his reasons to be a persuasive basis for deviating from well-established department policies in a way intentionally designed to avoid supervision by department leadership over his actions, the report stated. Next story is entitled, Turney Benefits Come with a Cost, by Matthew Flatten out of Decatur. Forsyth Classic organizers and local businesses have for years lauded the economic impact of the tournament, but not everyone is in favor of the cost it takes to keep it going. The 34th edition of the Symetra Tour tournament will tee off at Hickory Point Golf Course today. Tournament director Cindy Dedick Wolfer said the surrounding restaurants, hotels, and businesses in Decatur and Forsyth can expect to see $500,000 of combined spending related to the tournament based on analysis done by the LPGA. It's based on the money that the host families spend to house somebody, the hotel motel rooms that are used, the money that the tournament itself spends for things that it has to buy gas, retail, restaurants, Dedrick Wolfer said. While the tournament brings in money for community businesses, the community has to pay to put tournament on. In addition to private sponsorships, the Forsyth Village Board spent $90,000 on this year's tournament and will spend $100,000 next year. In May, the Decatur City Council killed a longstanding $20,000 sponsorship for the tournament. The measure failed after a 3-3 vote that Mayor Julie Moore Wolf was unable to break because she was away in Washington for a work-related meeting. Council members who voted against the funding cited concerns about other financial pressures on the city, and in the case of Councilwoman Dana Ray, the decision by tournament organizers to drop Decatur from the name this year. Dedrick Wolfer said she thought the city council's decision was short-sighted. I don't believe that the council was looking at the big picture, she said. I want them to look at the tournament as a major impact in our community, from a quality of life perspective, from an economic perspective, and from a diversity perspective, not just how much it costs. My other frustration is that I reached out to every council person and asked them for the opportunity to talk with them and explain the tournament, and three did not give me that opportunity, and I feel badly that they didn't want to hear about it. Bill Clevenger, executive director of the Decatur Park District, which operates Hickory Point, said, while the Park District doesn't have direct funding, he estimated it commits between $15,000 to $20,000 in-kind support. That's getting the course ready. That's the extra stuff that you do with your staff, the extra mowing, the extra preparation day in and day out leading up to the tournament and during the tournament, Clevenger said. It's also a calculation of foregone revenue during the tournament. Jack Kenny, a member of the Decatur Park Board of Commissioners, said he has mixed feelings about the tournament. I like the tournament a lot, but the Park District is losing money on it, and I'm not a big supporter of it, Kenny said. I am a supporter of it in that I'll be out there Saturday and Sunday driving carts, but I can't say the Park District should be continuing to help support it and lose money on it. I think it's great that businesses in town get something from it, but I hate to see the Park District lose money on it. The Forsyth Classic is part of the Symetra Tour, which is the developmental tour for the LPGA. Every year, the top 10 golfers in the Symetra Tour earn their LPGA card. A field of 144 golfers will participate in this year's Forsyth Classic. Beach house owner Todd Mason said he's seen those golfers bring a lot of money into the community. He said every year the Symetra Tour hands out vouchers to the golfers that can be redeemed for $5 off at various local restaurants. I had a big stack of cards last year because they start coming into town Monday and Tuesday, and they're here all week, Mason said. Every year since I've been in the business, we notice that this week there's an uptick, and we always have a couple extra servers. It's true that there is an economic impact for the restaurants. I can tell you it's legit. Mason says he sees a parallel between the tournament and the Farm Progress Show, the agricultural trade show that brings thousands of people to Decatur every other year. Your dinner customer volume is a lot higher, but what is interesting about it is instead of seeing boots and John Deere hats, you see Titleist hats and golf shirts, he said. August Francis, the front desk clerk at the Fairfield Inn by Marriott and Forsyth, said, bookings are up this week. We are sold out the next few days, which is rare, Francis said. I've seen it as high as 85 to 95%, but we've never been sold out in the 4 months that I've worked here. When there's an uptick, normally we can judge why by the guests coming in, and we're seeing lots of golf equipment and golf hats this week. Local golfers, though, often complain about revenue missed because of lost tee times during prime golf season, especially since this year the Optimist Junior Golf Tournament is being played at Red Tail Run at the same time. The local golfers are a little pushed to have a place to play for 3 or 4 days, but I don't hear too many gripes about that, Kenny said. I think it's gotten to the place where we've kind of accepted it. Clevenger said the impact on the local economy and the value of the tournament to the community outweigh lost rounds. I think there's always people who take a different view on any event that we have in town, so you kind of have to expect some of that, Clevenger said, but I think you have to look at the good of golf, and is this a good face of golf for our community. The event puts a spotlight on golf, and one of the unique things about it is that it's a women's tournament, and we're trying to attract boys and also girls into golf. It's an opportunity to show 144 successful women in the sport. And the next story is flags retired with honor and dignity. Out of Mount Zion. To Scoutmaster John May of Mount Zion's Boy Scout Troop 43, the meaning behind Flag Day all boils down to a matter of respect. That sentiment is what May hoped those who attended and participated in his troop's flag retirement ceremony Thursday evening took away. The hour-long event was held at the Mount Zion Lions Club Park Foundation Pavilion. No matter what grudge you have against our country, the flag should be respected, May said. A lot of people give their lives up so that we can be free and that our flags can fly. Assisted by Mount Zion's Cub Scout Pack 43 and Boy Scout Venturing Crew 343, Decatur's Boy Scout Troop 202 and the Dalton City American Legion Post 475, Troop 43 Scouts solemnly oversaw the retirement of hundreds of worn and tattered flags by burning during the ceremony. Thursday was the 19th year that Troop 43 led its flag retirement ceremony in observation of Flag Day, which annually commemorates the June 14, 1777 adoption of the Stars and Stripes as America's flag. May said all the roughly 400 worn flags burned on Thursday were donated to Troop 43 by being dropped off at various locations in the area, including Kenny's Ace Hardware and the Village Barbershop. A large amount of people bring flags to us, May said. We get several the day of the retirement from people who want to make sure they're properly disposed of. The start of the retirement ceremony featured a color guard, a final inspection of the flags by Dalton City American Legion Post 475, and a call to order by Chief Warrant Officer 3 Christopher Thunder of the U.S. Army National Guard. After the first flag was ceremonially unfolded by the scouts, it was walked to one of three pyres and burned. Its time as a symbol for the country and its ideals having come to an end. The same process was then carried out for the rest of the flags in an assembly line fashion, as patriotic music played in the background. Tim Lee, Assistant Scoutmaster and Chaplain for Troop 43, said the retirement process adhered to the guidelines of the U.S. Flag Code. The code states that flags in disrepair must be incinerated in a dignified manner. Most people think, gee, if you're burning the U.S. flag, it must be a protest, Lee said, but that's the way we get rid of our flags. Learning proper etiquette when handling American flag is key during Flag Day, but Lee said the day and the retirement event also serve as an opportunity to bring people together and to understand how much others have given through the nation's history. It's kind of nice that it gives people a chance to talk about that and to recognize that many families have paid a high price, he said. Among the crowd of over 100 people who came to witness the retirement ceremony was Robert Moody of Mount Zion. It was the first time the Vietnam veteran had attended the event. Like many of those in attendance, the flag bears a special meaning to him. It means freedom, Moody said. People just look at the flag, but they don't go into detail on what the flag stands for, patriotism and freedom. And the next story is Expanded VA Clinic Unveiled out of Decatur. Dozens of area veterans and their family members Thursday toured the new 2.9 million VA outpatient clinic on the city's west side, where more space is meant to allow for a holistic approach to veterans' health care. The new 20,000 square foot outpatient facility at 792 North Sunnyside Road almost doubles the space taken up by the former site on East Mound Road. The other facility was rather small, said Todd Oliver, spokesman for the VA Eliana Healthcare System, of which Decatur is a part. We look towards health care around as patient-aligned care team, and we We're just out of space. The local clinic offers primary care, optometry, and mental health services, while veterans in need of more specialized services would visit the VA hospital in Danville. Limited space at the previous site meant that patients would see different healthcare staff separately, according to Diana Carzana, associate director of VA Ileana Healthcare System, a branch of the VA system that covers central Illinois and eastern Indiana. The new location offers separate pods in a central area, accessible to the entire clinic staff, preventing the patients from having to be shuttled from one room to another to receive various treatments. It's not just about the doctor or the nurse or the clerk, it's also about the social worker, the pharmacist, the dietitian. In this environment, we have a whole team of people working together on behalf of that veteran, Carzana said. James Qualls, a U.S. Army veteran, and his wife, Carol Sue, were among those who attended Thursday to get a peek at the new facility. With the VA here in Decatur and having access to prescription drugs, it's just been great for me, said Qualls, who served in Korea's demilitarized zone. The ribbon-cutting ceremony also included the unveiling of a new Blue Star Memorial Highway marker, which stands next to the new VA facility. The marker is the work of the Garden Club of Decatur, which has partnered with the clinic to beautify and maintain the surrounding area. It's really great. I'm really proud, Qualls said. It's a symbol of everybody's appreciation of the armed forces. To reach the new clinic from Decatur, take US 36 west to Sunnyside Road and turn left. The clinic is on the left. City bus route 52 provides public transportation to the site. The clinic's phone number is the same as before, 217-362-5442. The VA Ileana Healthcare System, of which Decatur is a part, provides services for more than 150,000 veterans living in the 34-county area of Illinois and Indiana. In local news, the board okays a second solar farm. The Macon County Board signed off on a second solar farm Thursday, though it's unknown when either project might start up. The board approved a plan by Atlanta-based Sol America Energy to build a 10 to 15-acre solar farm at a property on the northeast intersection of Brush College and Cundiff Roads. "We're all for solo," said Board Chairman Jay Dunn after Thursday's meeting. A 20-acre farm west of Oriana near the intersection of Brush College and Illiniwick Roads was approved by the board at its May meeting. That project was sought by Minneapolis-based Geronimo Energy. Sol America's application does not say how much energy is expected to be generated with its solar panels. Once construction does begin, it's expected to take 16 weeks before it's commercially operational. Solar energy is expanding rapidly in Illinois, fueled in part by a 2016 state law that creates incentives for renewable energy. The Future Energy Jobs Act, notable for preventing closure of Exelon's nuclear power plant in Clinton, calls for a quarter of the state's power production to come from renewable sources such as solar and wind energy by 2025. Solar farm developers must apply to the state for renewable energy credits that could offset the cost of building the projects. Pete Corbett, Senior Vice President of Engineering and Construction at Sol America, said after Thursday's meeting that construction was dependent on if the project was chosen by the state through a lottery system that is expected to occur this fall. If Sol America's project is selected, Corbett was hopeful construction could begin as early as next year. County leaders have said they don't know how much revenue solar projects like Sol America's could generate, but it's expected to be notably less than the $6.1 million in property tax revenue expected from the Radford's Run wind farm over the next three decades. Sol America's plan originally met some oppositions in the county's committees, specifically related to a piece of the original resolution that would require all solar panels to be at least 300 feet from a residence, not part of the special use permit. That distance was part of the company's original application, yet the county's still-in-development solar ordinance would require the distance from panels to properties not involved to be at least 500 feet. The board amended the resolution to say 500 feet before final approval. Dunn said after Thursday's meeting there was no timeline for when the county's solar ordinance would be finalized. And the next story is garbage rate hike proposed. The Decatur City Council will vote Monday on a series of garbage rate increases over the next 3 years, with the first hike set to take effect July 1. The basic residential fee for residents' garbage removal would change from $16.65 a month to $17.50 and go up 50 cents each July the next 3 years until it reached $19 a month in 2021. The $1 extra per month charge for unlimited yard waste would stay unchanged. It's the first rate change for residents since city officials enacted a comprehensive overhaul of Decatur's garbage collection services in 2010. 8 years ago, city officials contracted with four garbage haulers that have had sole rights to service different residential areas. In tandem with that, the city council approved changes to service that cut pickups from 2 days a week to one, eliminated backdoor and alley pickups, and unlimited yard waste pickup, and introduced single-stream recycling that allowed recyclable materials to be deposited into one large bright blue tote. The rate changes came before council members prepared to renew the city's contract with the private garbage haulers, including advanced disposal. City Councilman Pat McDaniel said the increase in rates simply accounts for the inevitable rising costs faced by haulers. No one wants to raise garbage rates, but in your businesses, haven't your expenses gone up over the last 8 years? McDaniel said. The garbage service changes in 2010 drew a great deal of consternation from residents at the time, something that city officials may be bracing for on Monday. You can raise people's taxes, but when you mess with the garbage, then they get upset, McDaniel said. City Manager Tim Gleason and Deputy City Manager Billy Tyus couldn't immediately be reached for comment Thursday evening. The council meeting is at 5:30 p.m. in the council chambers, third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Mattoon school shooter could get adult sentence out of Charleston. The next court hearing for Mattoon High School shooting suspect Jonah J. Lyons could determine if he'll face the possibility of an adult prison sentence. The hearing was scheduled during a court appearance Thursday for the 15-year-old accused of shooting another student at the school on September 20. The July 6 hearing will be for the prosecution's motion to allow a sentence in the adult prison system for Lyons if he's convicted but doesn't successfully complete his time in juvenile detention. Coles County State's Attorney Brian Bauer filed a motion that, if granted, would allow Lyons the option of a jury trial. Lyons is charged in a juvenile court where cases are otherwise limited to a trial before a judge. It could also mean the court proceedings would be open to the public, which isn't usually allowed for juvenile cases. Otherwise, if Lyons is convicted of a juvenile offense, he could only be detained in an Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice facility until he reaches the age of 21, at the most. Lyons is charged with aggravated battery with a firearm. For the adult equivalent of that offense, a prison sentence of 6 to 30 years is required with a conviction. The only other matter addressed during Thursday's hearing was Circuit Judge Matt Sullivan's agreeing to cancel an order for Lyons to be evaluated by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. Defense attorney Ed Pirano got Sullivan's approval for the evaluation in April, which Pirano said could determine if Lyons could be placed in a DCFS facility for treatment of his mental conditions. Pirano also earlier got Sullivan's authorization for an evaluation by the Illinois Department of Human Services. On Thursday, however, he said neither state agency has indicated a willingness to evaluate Lyons. Pirano showed frustration when he explained the obstacles to having Lyons evaluated for a placement in a facility that could provide the appropriate treatment. According to testimony at an earlier hearing from a psychiatrist who examined Lyons, a secure facility such as those of the state agencies could address the mental health issues he diagnosed in Lyons. Though he granted the motions for the evaluations in both instances, Sullivan denied requests to have Lyons transferred to either state agency while his case is pending. According to the examining psychiatrist's testimony at an earlier hearing, Lyons got into a fight with a girl at the high school a week before the shooting. That led him to decide to take a gun from his home to school and shoot her in the head when he saw her again, as the psychiatrist Lawrence Jekyll described it. Lyons said he didn't see the girl in the school's cafeteria as he expected, so he decided to go shooting down, according to Jekyll, and that's when he drew the gun and aimed it at another student, only to miss because he was subdued by teacher Angela McQueen, Jekyll said. One student was hit by one shot, but was reportedly but has reportedly recovered. Jekyll testified that his examination of Lyons showed that he suffers from a defiance disorder and other conditions for which he can't be treated at the Juvenile Justice Department. He said Lyons' actions were partly because of perceived bullying, but he also acts as a bully himself. And the next story is contract amendment approved out of Decatur. Teaching assistants who lost their jobs after the district restructured how it handles students with discipline problems have agreed to a contractual change with Decatur schools. The change, approved at the June 12th board meeting, allows the 24 teaching assistants to be recalled for any position they're qualified for, said Paula Busboom, president of the Decatur Federation of Teaching Assistants. Let's say I was a general education assistant, and all 24 were, Busboom said. The way the contractual language read, I could only be recalled to general education positions, and we knew we weren't going to have very many of those. We entered into a discussion and put it to a vote with the union membership to change the language so that teaching assistants could be recalled in either regular education or special education, as long as they're qualified for those positions. The membership approved of that, and union and district leadership met with the school's district legal counsel to form an agreement that would get the 24 rehired as quickly as possible, she said. The 24 teaching assistants that were displaced oversaw the district's alternative placement rooms. The school board on March 27 approved a new position, student support facilitators, who are required to hold a bachelor's degree and will take over supervision of students in alternate placement due to discipline issues. When the change was made, Superintendent Paul Frago said the reason for restructuring alternative placement was to comply with Senate Bill 100, which requires school districts to exhaust all other options prior to suspension or expulsion. A committee is working on specific guidelines for the student support facilitators and for the alternative education. With union security rules, displaced teaching assistants with seniority are presented with lists of open positions and may choose where they want to be placed. The APR positions were 6.5 hours a day, more than 5 hours more most teaching assistants work, Busboom said. And an additional agreement with the school board allows those teaching assistants to retain their higher hourly wage and the extra hour and a half for the coming school year. The agreement also gave the opportunity the APR assistants prior to making a decision as to the job they wish to have a half day to go visit the buildings with open positions, Busboom said. Additionally, because teaching assistants pay for their whole year's school insurance premiums during the school year, those who choose to retire when their positions were eliminated will be covered by health insurance through August 31, she said. The teaching assistants contract is in its final year, and Busboom anticipates bargaining to begin shortly after the beginning of 2019. Next story is to serve, protect, and support. Law enforcement carries Special Olympics torch through Decatur. Allie Jones will be running in the Special Olympics Illinois this weekend. He'll complete in-track events, including the 400-meter run, 4x100-meter relay, and the long jump. I'll be running real fast one time around, he said at the 400 run. I will also run the long jump. Jones was excited to talk about his competitions, but his smile grew when he discussed the officers that help him and other Special Olympians. The law enforcement and the police officers, they hand us our awards, Jones said. To continue their support, local Department of Corrections officers and staff spent Thursday running down US 51 carrying the Special Olympics Flame of Hope. The torch was headed for the Illinois competition to Hancock Stadium in Normal. Special Olympics was created for individuals with intellectual disabilities, allowing them opportunities to compete in athletic and sporting events. Nearly 5 million athletes compete throughout the year. Thursday's run with the torch marked the last example of area law enforcement support of Special Olympics, with previous high-profile fundraisers for including Cop on a Roof and the Polar Plunge in March. The 34 runners met at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center south of Decatur and continued their relay north to Bloomington. Officers and staff from other areas in Illinois will merge during the Special Olympics opening ceremonies this evening. This is the first year officers and staff from Decatur participated in the event. The torch began its trek in Marion. Each day they have ran about 50 to 60 miles, said Matt Miller, Department of Corrections liaison for the run. The runners registered online through Special Olympics and were required to pay $100. The run itself is an awareness, Matt Miller said. We carry the torch, which will light the flame of hope at the Summer Games in Bloomington. The torch will be carried nearly 1,500 miles by every branch of law enforcement across the state. The run started Sunday. The law enforcement officers are our heroes, said Vanessa Duncan, Special Olympics Illinois Region 1 Assistant Director for Development. The event brings awareness about our Special Olympics athletes going to the state summer games. And that brings to a conclusion the first half of the news for June 15th.